session number 28624, rule 4.
Rough ground it was, and much used, because, of course, Sandhurst was a short distance away. Aldershot is far from home of the British Army, as it was known, was also the home of the parachute regiment, so a lot of units using it. So it wasn't a huge area, but it was sizable enough for our purposes, and you would find a different area to train in. So, you know, you your compass reading, your map reading, all those skills were being improved the whole time too.
Okay. So were you taking the likes of your compass reading and your map reading? Was that being taken further than you'd got in basic training?
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah. We did basic training is precisely that. You just do a little of everything. Here we were now, it's important that our map reading was good and our compass reading was good, and our ability to move cross country at night was all coming into play now. And it's an intense course, just a 6-month course where you come out at the end of that as a platoon commander. But still type of fun. I mean, we were sport was very highly regarded there, and it was an important part of our training to take part in various games.
And which games did you play there?
Well, I played particularly there. It was the hockey season, and I played hockey for Mons, and we had a very, very good side, and we won the Southeast District Championship, and we went through a whole season without losing a game. Very lucky to have so many good players around in one intake.
Were there any other games that you played?
Well, no, there wasn't really the opportunity, because it was a sort of Wednesday afternoon and occasional Saturday thing. We had a rugged side. I would have enjoyed joining that, but once you were in the hockey squad, there you stayed. There wasn't really time for anything else. There was no swimming, no golf, nothing like that. It was either hockey or rugger at that time, and you chose one.
And was it as restrictive as your first training one? Did you get out in the evenings?
Not initially. I think there was a period there of something like 8 weeks when you stayed in camp. After that, if the opportunity arose, but it was such an intense course. I mean, there was an awful lot of evening work too, whether it was classroom or whether out in the training area. But most evenings were occupied. But I didn't really remember going out much, and there was so much to do. But occasionally you had a weekend, which meant that. Well, you worked Saturday morning, but you, unless you were in detention or something like that, you would get Saturday lunchtime, 2 o'clock, I think it was, until Sunday, 6 p.m., something like that. You would get a night pass, and so you could go up to London, go anywhere you liked.
And did you ever go up to London?
Yes, I did, yes, and indeed I did. I had a sister living there, so that was very convenient. I used to stay with her. But in the 6 months, you know, there wouldn't have been too many opportunities, because there was a lot of work to be done. So, but I'd come there 7 or 8 times, I'm sure.
Okay then. And the length of the day, you spoke there, you worked on a Saturday morning. What was the normal length of the day otherwise during the week?
Well, you were certainly up by 6 o'clock, and you know, you would certainly be... working right through the day and cleaning kit and so on until 8 in the evening. You will never finish before that. So that would be an in barracks day. I mean, if you were out on night exercise, which we were too quite a lot, then you were working through the night as well. But certainly a day in camp, because you were doing classroom stuff too, films, lectures, all that sort of thing. But your day would be 6 until 8, so.
Okay. And you spoke there about classroom work. Was this the theory that you would then put into practice when you were outside camp?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. A lot of training films to be seen to show you what a the tuna attack. I mean, there was live footage too of war films as well, for your talk, but there were a lot of training films, and then once the film was over, a lecture would be given by one of the training officers, and then that was something you would then be putting into practice, perhaps over the next 2 or 3 days. So it was theory, you're quite right, and then the practice came after that.
And were you tested on this?
Yeah, you were being tested all the time without an actual examination. This was people were being assessed, and though you knew you were being assessed, you weren't particularly sure when it was. I mean, obviously, if you were the platoon commander on a night attack, and there were people watching you and watching you give your orders to the men, then leading that attack. You know, if you got your map reading or your compass work wrong, and if your orders were a bit loose and indecipherable, you know, you weren't going to get a very good assessment. So people did fall by the wayside. I don't remember the statistics, but people were back squatted or just removed from Mons altogether as you went through your 6 months. And those that were left were commissioned.
So you did get some feedback?
Yes, you did. Yes. No, they were very good training staff. I mean, if you made a mess of it, they didn't just tell you you'd made a mess of it. They tell you precisely where you'd gone wrong. So, and you'd, the opportunity would then be given to you to improve and put things right. So you weren't just kicked out there and then. So, you know, they were teaching you. There's no question about it. Everyone's got to get something wrong in the early stages of something they've never done before. But they get the opportunity to be taught, corrected, improve themselves, and get on with it.
Okay. And with the classroom work that you were getting at this point, were you getting any unit identity, or was it like an army identity?
No, it was very much the, an army identity. If you mean by unit, you know, the unit you were finally going to join, absolutely not, because you all dressed exactly the same, and whilst you talked about the regiment that you would be hoping to join, you certainly weren't training with that in mind. You were part of this, you were living, really you were part of a billet, then you were part of this platoon within the intake, and there'd be other platoons within that intake, but you were all just one of whatever number it was.
And were you being taught like army history or anything?
No, that is something that Mons didn't do. Military history was something that Sandhurst found time for, because it was a 2-year course, and they would deal with the extras, if you like, such as military history and so on. Mons was purely a platoon commander's course in every sense of the word, and it was short and sharp, 6 months, and came out as a platoon commander with no knowledge of military history other than that you might have learnt yourself independently.
Okay. And was Mons, I think you said last time, that you had, was an S-type engagement?
Yes, the S-type, of course, had fallen away by now, because the S-type simply meant that I would join the army, do my basic training, which I did. I was guaranteed a WASB, War Office Selection Board interview, which I had, and then the S-type meant that this was just a selection process. If I failed that selection process, which was the interview, then I could just walk away from the army and go home. That didn't happen. So the S-type had now fallen away because I'd passed the interview. I was now at Mons. I was just training to be a short service officer. You know, Sandhurst was a career thing where you've got a regular commission. I would be getting a short service commission, which is 3 years, which you can extend, or indeed convert to regular, which I did.
So you were happy enough with that?
Oh, yes. Because I was just someone who was very keen to do a short service, see the world, get into the army too. What I just precisely, it suited me so well, and I knew it would. And dip my toe in, and then, you know, if it, at the end of 3 years you think, well, I've had a terrific time, but I think I'll leave now, you do. But if you want to extend, if the regiment allows you, you can. And so I stayed on.
So as you were progressing through this training, and you were meeting all the standards, at what point did you then apply to become a Gordon Highlander?
Yeah, that, I suppose that process starts halfway through, from memory. It's the normal thing, you know, you're told one day you've got a form to fill in, you've now got to make your selection, and I think it would have been halfway through the course, say 3 months. And the form is a very simple one. Simply, you have to make 3 choices of regiment. Not the one, you've got to put down 3, even though you know that the only one you want to join is the Gordon Highlanders. So you put down 3, and at some stage, the colonel of the regiment, well, 3 regiments, because will come and interview you, and you'll just be told when it is, and 3 interviews is what you'll have. And because, I mean, there may not be a vacancy in one of your choice, probably will be a vacancy in one of the others. Anyway, 3 interviews is what you have, and you wait and hope.
Do you remember the other 2 that you selected?
Yes, I did. You know, I just put them down at random with some help, really, because the only one I was interested in, truly, was the Gordon Highlanders. So I then put down, I remember, the Black Watch in 2nd choice, and then someone told me, one of the training officers, they're doing a bit of recruiting themselves for their regiments. There was a training major there, I think his name was Lucas Lesner, I think, from memory, who was a Cameronian, and he said, put down Cameronians, and I put down Cameronians. So those were the 3. The Black Watch then came back and said, no one gets into the Black Watch if it's only their 2nd choice, so you're not even going to be interviewed. Cameronians was the first interview I got, just in what manner of things, and I was accepted with Cameronians, but I'm still waiting for the Golden Hand interview.
And was the interviews held down at Mons, or had you to come up north?
No, they were all held at Mons. They never interfered with your training. So they came to you, and time would be allocated at 6 p.m. or something for you to go off, because there's someone waiting to see you. So. And you know, the colonel of the regiment who came along would be possibly seeing 6 cadets, and he would do his lot for that intake. So you would just be told when it's time for you to get for an interview.
And do you remember your interview?
Yes, I do. Yes, yes, the colonel of the regiment at the time was Brigadier the Earl of Caithness, who sadly had one leg amputated, and he was unwell at the time, so he couldn't make the trip. And his deputy really was Colonel Forbes, of course, Patrick Forbes, who ran the regimental headquarters in Aberdeen. And he came down to interview me, and I remember it very well indeed. He asked me what made me think I'd be a good Gordon Highlander, and why was it the Gordon Highlanders, and was I really suited to the Gordon Highlanders, and all sorts of questions that you have to answer.
And had you thought of the answers that you would give?
Juno, I don't think so. I don't think we really prepared ourselves too well for matters like that. You were so busy getting on with your army training and the course you were on. I don't think you know, with hindsight, we allocated enough time to it at all, because I remember when he said, why the Gordon Highlanders? I said, well, an Aberdonian. My father was an Aberdonian. My father was a wartime Gordon Highlander in the Great War. you know, these are really the reasons. And I dare say he had relatives in the Gordon Highlanders, so it would be unusual to want to join anything else. And he, I remember he said, is that all? Is that the only reason you've got for joining Gordon Highlanders? And I said, yes, I can't think of any other reason. No, he said. And I wondered how that interview had gone, because I think that was the note on which we finished.
And was that a normal interview situation?
Yes, just, in a very basic room. I mean, it wasn't a sort of mess type arrangement, because we didn't have messes. I mean, it was a Spartan camp, and just probably a very empty room with a desk and a chair on either side of the desk, and pretty Spartan altogether.
And had you to wait some time before you knew?
No, I don't think so. I think... again, we heard very quickly. I mean, I didn't hear then. That I think there was only, yes, I know for sure, there was only one other interview he was conducting. There was only one other chap, Bob Gerard, who now lives in South Africa, whose father had commanded Gordon Highlanders. He was the only other candidate. But I think we heard next week, training company office. Listen, that we'd both been accepted, so that was very good news.
Okay, and so you continued with your training,
yeah,
up to the 6 months. And whilst you were on Mons as well, and I think you said it was in Aldershot?
Yes.
And so it was a big military establishment?
It was not too big compared to the rest of Aldershot. Aldershot was and is a garrison depot, headquarters of the Parachute Regiment, and there were some very sizable units there. So I suppose we were a fairly minor unit insofar as there would only be two companies, say 120 cadets there at any one time, with a big training staff. But even so, that doesn't make I would think the drivers and cooks and everything, I wouldn't think there were more than 250, say, in that camp, whereas one of the major units, Parachute Regiment, would have 750 in their camp and so on. So we weren't a big camp, but we covered a biggish area. We were quite spread out. It was an old, typically old wartime camp.
And were there any females there, or was it a male-only establishment?
Yeah, male-only, absolutely not. No. Not sure if they were banned, but they certainly weren't apparent then.
I was about to say, was there any on the civilian staff?
Yeah, I don't recall any at all. There might have been in the office. I really don't recall seeing any at all. No.
Okay. And everyone speaks about the army food. Was it good at Mons?
No.
You remember?
No, I can remember. It was terrible. No. The army food in those days really was so bad. I wouldn't know whether the raw product was bad, but certainly the cooked product, which we used to see, was terrible. And you know, I remember then when I left 11 years later how good it was. Just excellent. But no, in those days it was terrible.
Was there anything particularly bad about the food that you can remember? Was there a particular dish that was...
I think we used to get either fish or meat, basically, and one was as bad as the other. They would have been inedible, really, to anyone who wasn't ravenous as we were. The only reason we polished it off was we were so hungry, we did so much physical work, we were just starving the whole time, and we polished it off, but it really was awful.
Okay. I know that you were busy whilst you were doing this training, but when you did have some relaxation time, was there any opportunity for films or anything on camp?
No, we didn't. We didn't have a cinema in camp. All we ever used to do was get together in the NAFI canteen and. Just chat about things in general there. I'm pretty certain that latterly, if you had time, you were allowed to go down to a cinema in Aldershot, and I think we might have done that probably twice at the most, because quite honestly you were quite tired at the end of the day, and there was always plenty to do still to get ready for the next day, whatever it was, and going out was not really a treat, and there was always a time in by, so by the time you got down to the centre of Aldershot, in time to come back, I think.
So when you reached the end of your course, what happened then?
End of the course, it finally came after battle camp. We came back, and there was a 4 weeks preparation for the commissioning parade. The commissioning parade took place, and then we had 2 weeks leave, and you then had a posting order to your own depot. By then you'd made all the necessary arrangements to get your regimental uniform, collected that in the 2 week time, and then I reported as instructed to the regimental depot, which was at Fort George at the time. Gordon Highlanders and Queensland Highlanders had merged, not as a regiment, but merged as a training depot. So it was a joint training depot up at Fort George, near Nairn. And there I went, awaiting, learning really how to put on my uniform, learning how to be an orderly officer, just learning whatever you could pick up in the short time we were there, which I think probably amounted to 9 or 10 days whilst we were waiting for, this is Bob Sherrod and I were there together, waiting for our flight out to join the battalion, which was in Kenya. Then we flew out of Stansted, I think, and so we were waiting for our flight. We were there about 10 days.
Okay. And you spoke about 1 week before your actual commissioning parade. What did you do in that week?
That was just drill. Drill, drill, drill and drill. And getting your kit, your commissioning kit, up to standard. But sufficient to satisfy the RSM. And and that's all it was. It was just intensely drill orientated. And I do also remember there was one this great hockey match when we won the cup final, Southeast District Command. So that was the only relief from drill. So we were just really preparing for the commissioning parade.
And the uniform that you wore in that parade, was it a special uniform or?
It was the man's, it was an officer cadet number 2 dress, so that was trousers and tunic, all the same, nothing regimental about any of it, with our cap in the man's cap badge, and our collar had the white georgettes that signify you're an officer cadet, and you probably more familiar with the red georgettes that you'll see a full colonel wearing, but we had white ones which signified officer cadet status or rank, and then as you march past the officer taking a parade for the second time, you then are commissioned. So from that point on you're a second lieutenant.
Okay. And this uniform that you wore, had that been issued to you at Mons?
Yes, that's right. Issued to you there, and then you hand it in after the parade. You have it for your entire 6 months. So you rarely, you wear it occasionally, but mostly you're in battle fatigues because you really are doing a lot of training. But we wore it when we were on the drill, on drill and that sort of thing. But then that's just handed back. We're ready for the next intake of cadets, as long as they're going to fit it.
What about your rifle? You know, the rifle that you'd had in basic training, did that carry on with you, or did you get another one?
No, that stays at that particular depot. You leave that behind you. You get your new one at Mons, and it's yours for 6 months, and then that reverts back to the army, and you move on without a rifle until you get your new unit, the Gordon Highlanders 1st Battalion.
Okay. And the actual commissioning parade, was it similar to a passing out parade, or was it a grander
affair? Yes, it was. It was a grander one. there would be a band, for example. I can't remember where that band came from, but they imported a band, and you're training with that band actually for that last week. You never are before that, but it is altogether a grand event, and it's attended, of course, by mothers and fathers and so on, and spectators there. It's a very nice occasion.
Do you remember who was taking the salute?
I hope you wouldn't ask me that, because I can't, and I've been trying to think. But I do remember that the poor man, who was a very senior officer, and I really can't remember who he was, but general rank anyway. But I remember he was outranked by one of the guests, because the godfather of a cadet in my billet, who was going to be joining the Irish Guards, called Lord Goff. His godfather was Field Marshal Alexander of Tunis. So he was there amongst the guests, and a very senior man he was and had been during the Desert Campaign and so on. But I can't remember. It comes back to me one day who took the salute.
And the, you know, the other young men who you were training with, were they a mixed crowd, or, you know, were they mostly from wealthy families?
No, they were a good broad mix. There were those, of course, who did have private incomes, and in those days, you know, certain regiments demanded that, cavalry regiments, Guards Brigade, that sort of thing. But no, there was a very good broad mix, and anyway, everyone got on so well. I mean, it really was a great, you know, the army is a team, and you learn from day one that you're just part of this team, and so it didn't matter who anyone was or where they came from or where they were going.
And so would you have said that there was a good relationship between all ranks, you know, whilst at Mons?
Oh yeah, oh terrific, yeah, oh yes.
And was there a meal or something after your commissioning parade?
Yes, there was. And whilst we went at it, the officers' mess, where all the training staff went to after work, was opened. Was hosting a very nice buffet lunch, which was where all the guests were invited to go. So they had a nice lunch. We didn't. We went back to our canteen and or the cookhouse. And anyway, we then had to move very quickly. I mean, because we had to hand in all our kit, the kit we were wearing, the kit we'd had throughout our 6 months, you know, and had to hand it all back into the QM stores. Had to be inspected to make sure no holes in it, we hadn't burnt anything. And so on. So there was plenty to do, and we had to do that, because all that was going to take at least 2 hours. Whilst, you know, we were then signed off from Mons, so to speak, during which time mothers and fathers were all having lunch, and then we would meet up and head off home.
And whilst you were training to be an officer as well, do you remember how much your pay was?
It was exactly the same as it had been, because a Nossic cadet is exactly the same. It's private soldier pay, and I'm sure that it was round about £4 a week. That's right. And then I do remember that the moment your commission, you go up then to second lieutenant rank, which is much higher. So it went up from roughly £16 a month to 28, I think.
Okay. Thank you.